17.
"Now this is a send-off," the imp said as he marched beside Alwyn. "The Duke of Rakestraw's all right, even if he is a higher than thou."
Alwyn looked over and down to see the dwarf's head turn to the right, watching the band of the 14th Household Cavalry play them out of camp. Their instruments gleamed under a pale blue sky dominated by the fiery white sun. Alwyn didn't recognize the tune, and couldn't tell if it was for good luck or good riddance, but it was bouncy and loud, and it felt good, especially as it took his mind off the heat.
"I thought the cavalry had gone west," Alwyn said, mopping sweat from his face with the back of a sleeve.
He then ran a hand over his face and held it out in front of him, pleased to see that the jacket's dye hadn't run.
"Maybe there were benefits to being in a regiment with a prince as its colonel."
Yimt turned back to face straight ahead, the wings on his shako flapping slightly as he strode along.
"Charging around at their own shadows like a flock of witless pigeons," he said.
Alwyn nodded, his eyes drawn to the sound of fluttering cloth up ahead. They had unfurled the colors. Perhaps only the Queen herself commanded more loyalty than the pair of square flags each regiment was given. The flags, always cotton with fine wool stitching, silk was for ladies' unmentionables, the recruiting sergeant had said, buying Alwyn another beer and pushing the enlistment parchment in front of him, hung from 8-foot-tall halberds, carried by 2 color sergeants, designated to protect them with their lives. 6 very tough-looking soldiers, and that was saying something considering the recruiting pool, marched beside them, tasked in turn with protecting the color sergeants. It wasn't much of a walk to say that, in turn, the regiment looked after them. To lose a color on the field of battle was worse even than running in the face of the enemy, so long as you took the colors with you. The dominant flag was the Queen's colors, replete with the royal cipher of intricately woven letters and leafy garlands, on a shimmering silver-green background. Rumor had it that the silver in the flag was real spun metal, but its worth as a symbol far outweighed however many ounces of precious metal might have been contained in it. The second was the regimental colors, a black flag with the national ensign of Kalar in the top left corner, while the main body of the flag featured a mountain range outlined in silver above a dark green forest. Elvish script arced across this in steel-colored embroidery, which read, "Ere Mecca," into the fire. Alwyn felt both pride and fear at those words.
"Blast! The music stopped already," Yimt said.
Alwyn listened and realized the band wasn't playing anymore, but a new and exceedingly unpleasant sound had taken its place.
"Them ain't the Iron Elves. Look more like the rusty remains to me."
"Hey, you! You, the short, fat elf! What happened? Did you fall out of a tree on your head?"
"We can relax now, boys. The steel fairies are here to save us."
Alwyn gripped his musket and glared back at the soldiers. Yimt chuckled and patted Alwyn on the hand.
"Pay them no mind, Ellie. They're just jealous. Besides, remember that notion, sticks and stones and all that? There ain't nothing they can say that should bother you."
"Nice dresses, ladies."
Yimt was a small, fast blur as he charged out of the ranks.
"It's a Kerna, you flea-bitten jockey,"
he yelled, shaking his fist in the air to shouts of laughter. Several band members dabbed at their eyes with handkerchiefs and clutched their sides as Yimt stomped around shouting curses that involved physical acts of self-pleasure that Alwyn figured not even a wizard using all his powers could accomplish.
"Why don't you play us a song under a full moon?"
Yimt yelled, turning and bending over to reveal his fleshy dwarf posterior to the startled cavalrymen. It was the Iron Elves' turn to laugh as several of them followed suit, offering their own cheeky salute. Yimt darted back into the ranks and resumed his place beside Alwyn.
"I stand corrected," he said, laughing merrily as he marched along. "Now that was a send-off. Here, how about a song?"
"The Warlock's Lament," someone shouted.
"I don't know that one," Alwyn said.
No worries, Ellie. Just follow along.
With that, the dwarf burst forth in what Alwyn could only assume he thought was singing, immediately joined by the rest of the regiment. There once was a warlock, old and randy, who fancied a witch sweeter than candy. Beware, old Greybeard, watch out what you wish for. May I take a dip in your cauldron some time? Asked the warlock, slyly pouring some wine. Beware, old Greybeard, watch out what you wish for. If you polish my jugs, I'll grant you a wish. Rub my wand, said he, and I'll eat from your dish. Beware, old Greybeard, watch out what you wish for. So he ate what she served, and she rubbed what he had, and 9 months later his new name was Dad. Beware, old Greybeard, beware. New stanzas were added, with Yimt supplying most of the more colorful ones. Alwyn could only shake his head and wonder how high the dwarf might have risen in the army if he had put his creative energy to better use. Still, Yimt seemed happy, even if his crystal ball had a few cracks in it. The dwarf sure knew the ins and outs of army life better than anyone Alwyn had ever met. All in all, it was better having Yimt as a friend than an enemy. "Now that's got the blood up," Yimt said, taking a break from singing to grab his canteen and have a drink. Alwyn took a quick look around, but no corporal or sergeant was in sight.
"Relax, Ellie. We're in the field now," the dwarf said, running a sleeve across his mouth after downing a prodigious slug. "The first rule out here is to keep yourself fit to fight. Button polishers and crease keepers don't amount to much when you're in the line, and there's a horde of screaming natives coming at you. This is the last time in a long time we'll shine like this. Take a look at our new kit, would you?" Yimt directed, waving his right hand around, his left cradling his shatterbow against his shoulder.
"Sure looks all fancy now. The silver green as fresh as spring clover. All the leather bits polished, the shako badge a-glitterin', bright silver piping on our jackets, not a frayed bastion loop, and every pewter button in place with nary a chunk of wood as a replacement. Yet. Even these fancy socks look spiffy without any holes in them."
He raised his legs higher as he marched, so Alwyn could get a good look at the black wool stockings with their band of embroidered green leaves circling the top just below the knee.
"Yep. Take a good look, Ellie, and remember this. Won't none of it stop a musket ball or a spear point. You can shine like a crystal ball in moonlight, but it ain't going to make a spit of difference to that arrow shot from 200 yards away."
Alwyn felt a sudden nostalgia for his old, worn uniform.
"So are you saying I shouldn't care about taking care of my stuff? The corporal would have my head."
Yimt looked up at Ellie, as if he'd sprouted tusks.
"Is there not enough air up there? I'm saying you got to focus on the important things. Musket, powder, boots, blades, water, and victuals. Sure, you take care of your kit, but just so's a corporal don't write you up, see? Look," he said, pointing to his chest. "See how the cross belts cover up most of the buttons? Well, when you're out here, if you have to polish, you only polish the ones that the corporal can see?
Alwyn did, though he thought he'd still polish every button just in case.
"And that's the key to surviving out here?"
Yimt marched along in silence for a minute, and Alwyn was going to repeat the question, when the dwarf finally answered.
"Ellie, the key to that is simple," Yimt said.
There wasn't a trace of humor in his voice.
"Wherever death is swinging his scythe, you be somewhere else."
"But we're infantry. We're always going to be where death is."
"Then carry a bigger scythe,"
Yimt said, patting his shatterbow. Alwyn gripped his musket a little tighter and hoped it would be big enough. The plain simmered like a skillet over an open fire. The sun was shining off the ebony spikes of cactus thorns sprinkled throughout the vines, causing them to twinkle with something close to malevolence at the approaching flesh. Prince Tyken had decided on this route, deeming it the least likely to be watched by enemy scouts.
Kanawha could see why. The prince led the regiment on a magnificent charger named Rolling Thunder, a silvery-gray 4-year-old Mernian gelding, a breed rare and much sought after among royalty and wealth for their precious metal coloring. That Kanawha knew this much about a horse was thanks entirely to the lengthy lectures Jal had subjected him to over the years about the qualities and temperament of various horse breeds. It bordered on criminal in Kanawha's eyes that a soldier got little more than a piece of silver a month in service to the empire, while a horse like the prince's could be worth hundreds of pieces of gold. It was a bloody great waste of money as far as Kanawha could tell. Dust from the road had already dulled the animal's coat to pewter, and a large spotted animal skin, made into a shabrack, covered a large portion of its body, leaving very little of the horse's coat to be seen. More gold down the well cushioned the future king's behind. His saddle was wrapped in a thick red fur from a bear the prince himself had dispatched on an earlier expedition, which probably meant the prince had been allowed to walk up and stab it with his sword after the poor animal had been dead for a day. And just in case that bit of tack didn't woo the damsels, the prince had the bridle and reins fitted with ornately decorated wrought silver and burnished brass. Kanawha gave it less than a week before some enterprising soldier had pocketed a few bits of the finery. Kanawha squirmed in his saddle and looked over his shoulder at the troops marching behind them, then quickly faced front again. His embarrassment at riding when the soldiers had only their feet to move them was galling, but the prince was adamant that they ride as befit the station of officers, so Kanawha found himself bouncing along most unhappily on a large black gelding named Zwindera, alone from the Duke of Rakestraw. Unlike the glittering prince and his steed, Kanawha's tack was simple sturdy brown leather, the shabrack a quickly converted kerna with a regimental crest, sewn on either side. The saddle itself was covered with the softened hide of an animal Kanawha thought might just be Skunk Dragon, no doubt a parting jest of Jal's. Kanawha looked ahead to their chosen path with barely concealed dread. Everywhere he looked, vines lay across the plain like one great slithering mass, heaped on top of itself in looping coils of green sinew. In places the stems were as thick as banyan trees, creating impenetrable walls every bit as daunting as those of a stone-and-mortar castle. The fortress at Lugath-Jor lay 200 miles to the east through this morass, a journey of at least 2 weeks with no further impediments beyond what nasty surprises the land itself could spring. Kanawha doubted, however, that nature would be their only foe. "I think I'll check on the troops, sir," Kanawha said, motioning back at the regiment.
"I won't have them mothered, Major," the prince said, but waved him away all the same.
"Sir," Kanawha replied, and swung Zwindera in a short arc to allow the regiment to march past. "Pasty twit," Kanawha muttered, watching the prince ride on. Unlike his highness, he worried about the morale of the troops, but after the initial shock of the kerna, their sense of pride in their new regiment began to take over. He'd sensed as much as he'd seen their backs grow a little straighter, their chins lift until they were marching with purpose, only beginning to feel the mystique of belonging to the Iron Elves, no matter that most of them had never even seen an elf up close before in their lives. Kanawha readjusted himself in the saddle, patted the spot on his jacket where the pouch lay underneath, and watched the regiment pass. They marched in column. 6 elves, men, he corrected himself, abreast, their winged shakos bobbing in time. White flashes of knee sparkled where legs not normally exposed to the sun now gleamed between the hems of kernas and the edge of stockings. A few shouted greetings to him as they marched past, and Kanawha nodded and smiled. Seeing soldiers once again wearing the uniform of the Iron Elves stirred mixed emotions in him, his mind seeing elves he once knew where a new and unfamiliar face now marched. "I won't fail you again," he silently vowed.
"You almost look like you belong in a saddle, Swift Dragon," said the Duke of Rakestraw, sidling up to Kanawha on a huge roan. "Jal, what are you doing here?"
"You didn't think I'd let you slip away without saying goodbye now, did you?" the Duke asked, smiling. "I thought maybe you were here to check on your investment," Conover said. "You let me drink your wine, bought my commission to Major, and loaned me one of your own horses. I've only been out of the forest for a week, and already my debt to you knows no bounds." Zhao slapped his knee, and both horses started.
"Bah! You'd do the same for me. Think nothing of it. Besides, Zwendera here is no ordinary steed. His great-great mare was a unicorn, and he's got a bit of the mystic about him. If you get into a bind, he'll stand firm and won't veer."
"Just like his master, then," Kanawa said, leaning down to pat the horse on the neck. Zwendera swung his head back and tried to bite Kanawa's hand. Jal roared and shook his head, his red hair flying madly from underneath his helmet.
"Oh, and he's a tad temperamental, but I figure you two should cancel each other out."
"Your kindness will not be forgotten." The Duke laughed some more.
"Just bring yourself and this motley crew back again, and I'll consider your debt paid in full."
Kanawa felt the sting, even though it wasn't Jal's intention.
"It's a new day, my friend. A new beginning. They'll shape up, you'll see."
"By the way," the Duke said casually,
"Lorien tells me you had a meeting with a veteran of the regiment."
For a long moment, all that could be heard was the creak of the saddle and the clomping of hooves.
"I don't blame him, Jal. I hate me, too."
The Duke's gloved hand came down hard in the front of Conowa's saddle as he leaned close to whisper in his ear,
"You listen to me, laddie. You take that guilt and you shoot it, stab it, and bury it deep. The past is done. There's 300 soldiers that are alive and would like to stay that way. Don't matter if they're elves or not. Don't matter if they like you or not. You don't have the luxury of feeling sorry for yourself or letting others carry around thoughts of revenge. First chance you get, you deal with him. Hard."
He let go of the saddle and straightened up, smiling once again.
"But look on the bright side. Those Elfkynen get one look at your lads and their shapely legs, and they'll die of laughter, and everyone will come back a hero."
There was a sudden blaring of trumpets. The noise rattled around Kanawa's head like marbles in an empty iron pot. Both he and Jal turned in their saddles to look back over the path they had come. A group of large, brown animals with huge, flapping ears, long trunks, and great, curving tusks of black ivory trundled through the vines with no concern for where the path might be.
"Merophants," Kanawa said, already feeling the ground shake beneath Zwendera.
10 of them,
the Duke said, shaking his head in clear amazement.
"I passed them on my way out here. They're loaded with enough supplies for this little mission to last a year, or until His Highness gets bored."
"As long as none of them are carrying Sala brandy," Conowo remarked. As the animals drew closer, he was able to make out the huge wicker panniers strapped to the Murifant's sides, and saw that they were absolutely bulging.
"Still room enough to bring back a bit of treasure, though," Jal said casually.
Conowa looked closely at his friend.
"Do you think a star could really be there?"
Jal shrugged his shoulders.
"Who knows? I've had a devil of a time trying to get any scouts up north with this new viceroy in place. But I've heard enough to tell me a myth about a star is the least of your worries."
Conowa nodded, further talk pointless as the Murifants rumbled past. Atop each beast, just behind its head, sat a rider wielding a long feather. Whenever the rider wanted the animal to turn, the Elfkynen would touch the feather to the Murifant's appropriate ear, and the animal would respond by walking in that direction. Zwendera began to prance, and Kanawa had to squeeze hard with his knees to keep his balance. Jal leaned over and whispered something into the gelding's ear, and he immediately calmed down.
"You'll have to show me how to do that," Kanawa said.
Jal looked absolutely shocked, lurching in his saddle as if struck by lightning.
"You're the elf. Aren't you in tune with nature? Speaking with animals, making magical weapons from trees and all that?"
Kanawa took a hand off the reins and pointed at his chest, raising his eyebrows at his friend as he did so.
"Iron, elf. I-R-O-N. You're thinking of one of those squirrely elves that eats berries and wears bark undergarments."
The Duke laughed, his eyes watering with the effort. A Murifant trumpeted in response, and the two friends nudged their horses out of the way as the massive beasts of burden rumbled past toward the marching column of soldiers up ahead. Kanawa craned his neck to take a look at the riders as they went by and recognized one.
"Vecina!"
She looked down at him, but did not wave, instead tapping her Murifant with her feather and steering it toward him. Kanawa pulled back on the reins. Zwindera whinnied and turned a baleful eye on him, but allowed him to be nudged forward toward the huge animal and its waving trunk.
"What are you doing here?"
Kanawa yelled up at her when she was alongside. She brushed the hair out of her face before answering, and Kanawa was struck again by her beauty. She was dressed much the same as she had been in the forest, but instead of sandals, wore toughened canvas boots. Her hands and arms were covered by wide-cuffed gauntlets of a silky material that looked like skillfully woven leaves. And there was something else, a coldness in her look that he didn't understand.
"The prince commandeered these animals and supplies for this expedition," she said, not really looking at him. "And as my father's representative, I am coming along to safeguard our property. Besides, you have no surgeon, and I know how to treat the sick and wounded."
"This is hardly the kind of expedition a woman should be on," Kanawa said. "We're sure to see battle."
"Then all the more reason for my coming along," she said, giving the feather a snap so that the Murifant veered closer, startling Zwindera.
The horse took a nip at its trunk, eliciting a bellowing roar from the beast.
"He always was a charmer," the Duke said, sidling his horse up to Zwindera and giving the horse a pat. "Jal Edrahar, Duke of Rakestraw, my lady," he said, looking up at Vecina.
He doffed his helm and bowed low in the saddle in a single fluid motion that never failed to impress the ladies.
"Ah, yes, the drinking partner. Shouldn't you be leading an expedition in the other direction?"
she said, giving the feather a swish and swinging the Murifant back toward the rest of the herd as it followed after the regiment.
"A pleasure, my lady,"
the Duke called after her, laughing loudly as he put his helmet back on.
"And she only tried to kill you once, you say?" he asked Kanawa.
"I didn't get a chance to turn on the charm," Kanawa said, watching the Murifants disappear in a cloud of dust.
"Good Lord, man, you had better start soon. I'm beginning to think there isn't a soul in this regiment who doesn't want to have a go at you."
"And my mother always said I played well with others."
"They weren't children. They were wolves. Didn't you wonder why the other tykes had furry tails?"
"I never did fit in with the tribe," Kanawa said, a feeling of melancholy washing over him.
"You don't fit in anywhere. But when has that ever stopped you?"
It was Kanawa's turn to laugh.
"When I was 7, I was out running the hills when I came across a traveling Bomak. He said he would tell me my future if I would pick him some apples high up in a tree. I did as he asked, he thanked me, and then he said, 'One day, you are going to die.'" "You should listen to your father," Jal said. "Get in touch with nature. Maybe that will give you a better attitude about things."
"Take my word for it, Jal," Kanawa said. "Up close, it's just a whole lot of dirt." The Duke smiled ruefully at his friend and held out his hand.
"Swift Dragon, you are without a doubt the least elvish elf I have ever met."
Kanawa took the Duke's hand.
"And you're the prettiest man I know."
For a long time after the Duke had ridden away to the west, Kanawa held on to a smile, the sound of his friend's laughter ringing in his ears.